Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. This episode took a while to make because it's a bit of a mess. See, I'm talking, of course, about the situation that in November 15th, Polish side reported that two missiles had hit the village of Przewodów in the country's Lublin province, just 3 miles from the Ukrainian border. And one missile hit a grain elevator, killing two people. And Polish authorities, NATO leadership, and world leaders at the G20 summit in Bali held emergency meetings to discuss this incident, and it's all turned into a huge mess, because everything has gone from weird to even more weird. See, at the beginning, obviously, everyone thought it was Russian missile, just, you know, going the wrong way, or being a provocation, or something like that. However, a bit later, people found out that it is quite likely that this was an S-300 missile, which is used by Ukraine and is an anti-air defense missile. And although Russia uses these missiles to strike ground targets with modified situations, the closest target they could strike would be quite far away. It seems likely that the Russians tried to strike another complex that produces electricity 35 kilometers inside Ukrainian border, and that in this case the Ukrainians launched an anti-air missile to intercept it, and you know they have these Soviet S-300s, and it's been proven at this point, seeing the wreckage of the whole missile site, that it's an S-300 missile, and that it apparently had missed its original target, and, you know, after that, the missiles are supposed to exterminate themselves. Well, that didn't happen in this instance, which is a sad accident. So, well, in total, that's how everything pretty much happened, but this is the official story, and this is where the weirdness begins. For example, here's a quote from Polish President Andrzej Duda. Quote, "There is no sign that this was an intentional attack on Poland. Most likely, this was a Russian-made rocket that was manufactured in the 1970s. There is no indication that it was launched by Russian forces. There is a high probability that it was a Ukrainian air defense missile." And the thing is, no one really blames Ukraine for the situation. The fact is that, well, people actually believe Russia, in this case, understanding that this is not their missile. But nonetheless, for example, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said, quote, "The incident in Poland wouldn't have happened if it weren't for Russia's war against Ukraine. If it weren't for missiles that are now being used to intensively shell Ukrainian infrastructure on a wide scale." UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak made a similar statement, saying, quote, "This is the cruel and unrelenting reality of Putin's war. As long as it goes on, it poses a threat to our security and that of our allies." So, yeah, everyone on the planet basically is saying that, yeah, this is most likely an accident, an unfortunate one, but it's still Russia's fault for, you know, having to shoot these anti-air missiles. And recently we have heard some weird things because, Ukraine, for unknown reasons, refuses to accept it was behind Poland's missile strike, despite this whole NATO activity that is not hostile to them at all. Ukraine's President Zelensky said that he had no doubt that his country was not to blame for a missile strike that, you know, hit the village. Zelensky said Wednesday on Ukrainian TV that his top military commanders had assured him that, quote, "it was not our missile and not our missile strike that was the cause of Tuesday's incident, which provoked an international furor and fears that a wider conflict between NATO and Russia could erupt." Quote, "I have no doubt in Tuesday's report to me personally, from the commander of the Air Force to Commander-in-Chief Valery Zeluzhny, that it was not our missile and not our missile strike." End quote. He reiterated calls from Kyiv to provide it with access to the site of the explosion near the village of Przewodów in the southeastern Poland and just a couple of miles from the Ukrainian border, and for Ukraine to be part of a joint investigation being led by Poland and the United States. Quote, "I believe that we have the right to this. Is it possible not to announce the final conclusions until the investigation is completed? I think it is fair. If someone says that this is our rocket, should we be in the joint investigative group? I think we should. It's only fair. And that's the thing. Rush obviously calls this a deliberate provocation. And Ukraine has taken this weird stance, although no one really blames them. And I've seen the missile. It is S-300 and conflict intelligence team, the group that I follow the most and that I respect the most in analyzing this whole war. They also claim that, this is just an error, and errors do happen. And I'm quite surprised as of why Ukraine is so hostile right now. Well, I can understand that the mood's not very nice there, obviously, because of all the shellings and everything, but I really don't get it. Then, well, of course, there was comments by the United States Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. Speaking in the news conference, Austin stated that he had full confidence in Polish government's investigation into the explosion, which has suggested this, that it was an air defense missile. And he mentioned that Poland had conducted the investigation in, quote, professional and deliberate manner, and that the United States would not get ahead of their work. He also stated, quote, we are still gathering information, but we have seen nothing that contradicts President Duda's preliminary assessment that this explosion was most likely the result of a Ukrainian air defense missile that unfortunately landed in Poland. Whatever the final conclusions may be, the world knows that Russia bears ultimate responsibility for this incident. Russia launched another barrage of missiles against Ukraine, specifically intended to target Ukraine's civilian infrastructure. So, he also just talks about Russia's deliberate cruelty, only deepening the United States' resolve to continue to support Ukraine's, quote, bedrock right to defend itself, end quote. So yeah, in this case, I think this kind of sums it up, because my first edition and second edition of this was a bit more panicky and worrisome, because I had watched a bunch of analysts in Russia and on Russian YouTube talking about how NATO would have to react, really have to react, if this was a Russian missile. But I tend to believe this explanation, although I don't understand why the Ukrainians are taking the position that they're taking. I mean, there could be some cover-ups going on, and maybe people have chosen this not to invoke some other articles. It's all a bit dubious, but I've seen at least some of the evidence, and seems legit. But of course, we will have to take a look at, well, everything a bit later. And talking about investigations, something's actually moving with the Nord Stream 2 as well. Nord Stream 2, a whole thing that exploded. Yeah, explosives have been found there, and we have some footage, apparently. Some investigators have some footage from the pipes underground, which means the methane has stopped flowing, which is great. So sooner or later, we will hear some answers about what exploded the stuff there. And this is kind of a part of this war. Every time you have some answers to some questions, 30 more questions arise that take your time to analyze and give answers to. But currently, at least there's one thing that's really interesting. Because Girkin, well, for now, I can officially state that Girkin is now a terrorist. He hasn't reacted to this, but The Hague, the criminal court in Hague made some very interesting conclusions and decisions recently. I'm going to talk about that now. See, besides the fact that our buddy Girkin, also known under the assumed name Strelkov, which I refuse to use because that makes him sound cooler, and a couple of other guys, well, you know, who were found guilty of blowing up the Malaysia Airlines MH17 flight from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, yeah, they were found guilty and given life sentences. In absentia, of course, because nobody's there. They were found guilty of murdering 298 people on board. A fourth suspect in the case, by the way, the Russian citizen Oleg Pulatov, had been fully acquitted by the court in the absence of sufficient evidence against him. While Pulatov's lawyers were present at the trial, the other suspects were tried in absentia. The court took their public statements to represent their position. And interestingly enough, the biggest part about this, because we all knew he was guilty, is the fact that the court deliberated on the competent immunity. You see, this means that, there's a difference between if these are fighters or if these are armed terrorist groups. And at least the court in The Hague, the international authority in these matters, has stated that, quote, "The court thus qualifies the Donbas conflict as an armed conflict overwhelmingly controlled by Russia, as evidenced by an ample body of recorded conversations presenting a picture of intensive contact between Russia and the self-proclaimed Donetsk DNR and its armed forces, with Russia's constant substantial support." This is quite interesting, since every time someone tries to speak from the other side, you know, the pro-Russian side, about what has been happening all these 8 years and how this has been a civil war and everything, I've been telling everyone all this time that no, in 2014 Russia invaded Ukraine. They started this. That there were no such mega separatist conflicts. That this wasn't a civil war or anything of that sort. This was Russian-funded mercenaries to have some plausible deniability entering there, and they had equipment clearly given to them by Russia. It's just like in Crimea, you know, little green men, just with bit more escalation. Well, right now, I have a great argument, which finally, I can say that, yes, we have enough evidence so that the International Court in Hague has finally admitted that, yes, this was fully Russia's involvement in all of this, and that, well, right now, what happened in February 24th this year is just another phase of this whole ongoing conflict that had, well, if you think about it, really started back in 2014. And I think that's the most important thing to take away from all this situation. Because, well, everything here just kind of shows to this. The prosecution, by the way, claimed that Girkin had requested the Buk missile system delivery from Russia, and that Dubinsky had been responsible for transporting it, and that the others assisted with the delivery as well as systems returned back to Russia following the downing of the plane. The book came from Russia, the book that shot the plane down, from Russia on that night of July 16th to 17th, 2014. And quote, "The suspects wanted the book, requested it, and received it." And this is the whole idea. The fact that it was Russia's delivery of the missile system that caused this whole stuff. They still don't know exactly who gave the order and everything. They just know who acquired the book. And seeing as Girkin takes great pride in his actions there, I have very little doubt that that everything there is kind of true. And all the time, you know, Russia has been denying this whole evaluation. They've even got some Spanish so-called experts to testify on this matter, but at least this part now is kind of closed. So yeah. And like I said, not like Girkin is going to serve a life sentence. Well, unless he's captured, but he's way more likely to get killed, which isn't a bad solution in the end, because, you know, he's been pretty useless to me since he went up to the front lines and we don't know anything about his exploits. I'm trying to find out, by the way, because I think that could be interesting for all of us. For all of us Girkin and Pals podcast listeners to check on his status and anything, but I really hope that he, at someday, rots in a prison cell by this sentence, you know. So that's the interesting statement. If someone, again, states that this whole situation was just a civil war and that the separatists were innocent, no, now we have a court statement and now we have evidence. And finally, oh yeah, because the front line, well, Russia isn't moving anywhere. They're attacking Bakhmut, moving about 100 to 200 meters per day, as Prigozhin says. And I think Bakhmut is just there because Putin needs to present something as a victory. I don't see a great strategic value of attacking that town. Meanwhile, Ukraine is regrouping, and there's rumors about, again, small-scale assaults, basically feeling out the opposition everywhere. it's getting colder, so the ground's going to get harder, so we're going to see more massive happening soon. But that's why the situation isn't that much about the front. Yeah, but in general, there were two incidents that happened that got my attention, since, well, both of them kind of show some points about the situation. Remember, a while ago, I mentioned that the Russian side has been taking down boats, blowing them up, and smashing them so that the Ukrainian side can't use them. And that's in the River of Dnieper, when they left Kherson and all that whatnot. Apparently, we have some documented incidents about friendly fire, when the last troops who were leaving decided to blow up their boat. But on the other side, a bit further on, some guys decided that, hey, someone's firing and someone's using that boat, so they started firing at them. Well, we got the video of it at the end, so it's not as terrible. Probably those guys survived, but hey, who knows? And finally, about the mobilization in Russia, and how, once again, you should not ever believe anything that Mr. Putin says. You see, recently Putin, very blatantly, very openly, with Shoigu intact and everything, very officially stated that the mobilization is over. Yet, again, at the same time, there was no ukaz, direct order, from Putin about how this whole thing is over. The thing is, I told you a couple of episodes ago that if there is no official order, there's no documentation to close it, it probably isn't over, and we'll see more waves of it happening very soon. And again, we have more court evidence. I guess we're, this episode is all about court evidence, isn't it? See, there were those guys who protested, the draftees who protested the mobilization, and we had a video, a funny one, where basically people were actively yelling, protesting at a park to their officers about how they're mis-equipped and how everything's terrible for them, and this one larger guy was really yelling at the poor tiny colonel who was just so tinier, and they just didn't want to obey commands because, well, they protested the whole situation, how they've been mobilized and what their status of equipment is and everything, and this went a bit viral, and yeah, this went to court. And court apparently managed to reach a decision, or of some sort. I don't know. Maybe the verdict isn't exact, but that's not the important part. The important part is that the court had decided that as this crime had happened during mobilization, that adds extra liability, extra severity to the crime. Although this whole protest happened days, I think even weeks, I think maybe like almost a week, days definitely, maybe a week and a bit more after Putin had stated the mobilization is over. Which just means that, you know, obviously it is not over. Just because Putin says something on the public television and just because he then decides to, you know, excuse himself and all that whatnot does not mean one bit that it is actual truth. It's just interesting. It's just yet again, yet another case of Russia blatantly lying and it just showing up like that. On that note, I still don't know what Lavrov is doing at the G20 summit, because I don't even know what he could possibly say there. Maybe just as a laughing stock. But yeah, this allows me to conclude that there's going to be a second wave of mobilization as soon as the regular draft is over, and that we'll see more action, and that everyone on the front lines and otherwise is preparing for yet another very hot phase of this conflict, which is going to happen, well, right now, as the ground freezes, and as everything, well, as the campaigning becomes a bit more easy to do. And that's about it for today. I'll inform you as soon as something more interesting happens, and I really want to hear some opinion of Girkin once again. He just keeps, you know, asking for new recruits to join his unit. And Prigozhin, you know, he also is a person that I'm going to be watching closely, since what he's been doing lately with his Wagner group and his extrajudicial killings and his show of power, how he gets officers released from duties and everything. Yeah, seems like he might be the one making some power bids sooner rather than later. But yeah, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. До свидания, товарищи. Please, if you want to support the show, consider becoming our patron on patreon.com/easternborder. We have also opened up a Mastodon account. I don't remember it by heart, but I'll post it somewhere. I'm not sure if I'll be very active there, but yeah, Twitter is still my main space where I answer all the messages, which is @eastern_border. If you want to give us a one-time donation, support us that way, because we're going to go back to Ukraine in January, you can just go to our webpage, theeasternborder.lv, and click the button, donate there. It accepts all sorts of cards. That would be really nice. And yeah, as usual, happiness is mandatory.